There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Well, hello, everybody. I'm Wendy Nix, Josina Anderson, Marcus Spears, Dan Orlovsky on this Wednesday afternoon. I say Wednesday because it's been less than a week since Tom Brady's season came to an abrupt end. In fact, it was just 4 days ago that the Patriots lost on wild card weekend. And now that means technically, not even technically, he's a free agent. That's Tom Brady. And he was on Instagram this morning and shared quite a bit, as you can see, about his current situation. But we've got what we like to call our translator here. That's Dan Orlovsky. He speaks Brady. So here we go. We will break it down a piece at a time. I just wanted to say thank you to all of our fans, or thank you. After a few days of reflection, I am so grateful and humbled by the unconditional support you have shown me the past 2 decades. And you think,
I think the coolest thing is that Tom Brady realizes how fortunate he has been to be a part of that organization. And he wants everyone to realize he appreciates being a Patriot. You know, Mr. Kraft and Coach Belichick, he appreciates the fans of Boston. It's such a great sports city. And it's important. Like, that's his end of the season press conference to make
that
sure
that is
I'm
a big
thankful.
Difference. So watch, those are fighting words in New England, going
it's
away
amazing.
Versus end of the season.
It's amazing how brains work. All I thought was he piecing out to New England. He's going to be
right.
on
okay.
a new team
right.
this year.
So
cool.
Stay with
that's
me.
My translation.
All right. That's your translation. I don't know if you speak Brady or not. I don't know, JoJo. All right. So then he says this. Okay. Running out of that tunnel every week is a feeling that is hard to explain. I wish every season ended in a win, but that's not the nature of sports or life. Thanks, Tom. Nobody plays to lose, but the reward for working hard is just that. The work.
Yeah, two things here. One, everyone always asks, or you hear people ask, like, why does Tom Brady want to continue to play football? And he answers it right there. Like, the inexplainable joy of running out of that tunnel. And then two, how it happens. Like, he is obsessed with the work that it takes and the challenge of the work to continue to play.
What tunnel?
All right.
What's the next line, Wendy?
Okay, all right, next. Okay. Told you I didn't think that you spoke Brady. I don't know. Okay. I have been blessed to find a career I love, teammates who go to battle with me, an organization that believes in me, and fans who have been behind me, us, he says, every step of the way. Uh-oh. Now that sounds...
That one's got a little bit different tone to me. That, I mean, for him to continue, like, to make
nostalgia.
The point, like, yeah, you know, I'm remembering how great it's been here.
Mm. Okay. I think he really is also just trying to reflect his appreciation to the community and the organization, especially when things come to such an abrupt end like that. And you're instantly reflecting at a time when you don't normally do that. I think he internally really does feel that gratitude, and he wants to, because
the voice of reason here.
Well, because there's uncertainty out there, and he wants to make sure everybody knows that he understands what they have invested in him also, you know, in terms of being there as well.
Reason prevails. Reason prevails. All right. Well, okay. Nevertheless, we continue the exercise.
Okay,
right? Exactly. I think she probably hit the nail on the head. But anyway, every one of us that works at Gillette Stadium strive to do their best, spent themselves at a worthy cause, and prepared to fail while daring greatly. I give Teddy Roosevelt credit for that one. And for that, we've been rewarded with something that the scoreboard won't show. The satisfaction of knowing we gave everything to each other in pursuit of a common goal. That is what team, as you can see, all caps, is all about. Emphasis on team.
Wisdom. But that's like that's wisdom from a vet to say, I mean, he's very much so like, we tried. You know, we tried. It didn't happen. It wasn't me. It was everybody. And so I think he's making sure everyone understands the success was a we thing. And the failure was a we thing as well, because a lot of people have pointed a finger at just 12, and he's making sure we tried, not just me, myself.
Or.
Interesting.
Or.
Wait, was that an or a R? Because that's the southern part.
y'all know what the hell I'm saying.
Yeah.
Nah, in defense of this notion that he had no one around him this year. That might have been a message to those guys that have had to hear all season long.
Okay.
Brady doesn't have weapons and they can't win. So that's leadership. Since we're getting serious.
The money line. Okay, here we go. Last one. In both life and football, failure is inevitable. You don't always win. You can, however, learn from that failure. Pick yourself up with great enthusiasm and place yourself in the arena again. I.e., I ain't retiring. And that's right where you will find me, because I know I still have more to prove. Now, I don't know where.
Boss. He said,
let's talk about the future.
Come get it. Come get it. I think Tom Brady's, I feel like Tom Brady's going, I'm not going anywhere.
Well, yeah, clearly, yes.
Everybody.
Your man
I'm
crush
still the king.
Tom Brady and Carson Wentz.
Now I got a man crush on Tom Brady.
Too? And Carson? There's no room for
this guy right here.
Make me sick.
He's saying, come get it.
In all seriousness, let's do talk about the likelihood that Tom returns to New England. Robert Kraft clearly has that as an objective, but Bill Belichick may have other ideas as they plan for the future, which you have to do at some point, Josina. So what do you believe the ultimate factors will be in that decision by the collective group that must make it?
Well, first of all, he's eligible to be an unrestricted free agent. We know that. And also his contract stipulates that he cannot have the tag put on. So he's essentially free and clear. I think the other thing that's really interesting when you look at the salary history of a Tom Brady is that he's actually never made more than $23 million a year in his career. When you think about where the quarterback salaries are. So on one hand, he's expressing all this gratitude and we did this and all this Super Bowl nostalgia and things that we accomplished in the past. And then when you look at it from a financial standpoint of what he's not made in terms of the actual quarterback market, this is a real opportunity for him to possibly explore getting somewhat closer, sniffing the $30 million realm that he's never actually, you know, had. When you're talking about quarterbacks like Russell Wilson, the quarterback, your guy from the Cowboys, or you know, that's he's trying to get, and what have you, and Carson Wentz, and so
Jared Goff,
some of these quarterbacks now that don't even have near close the resume, and
he has
potentially now for the first time, you know, start to explore that too. So that's really intriguing, actually.
Well, what's interesting too, I think, if you want any kind of new experience or different experience, he's never had a taste at that apple. He's never been a free agent. And at 42 years old, to think he could do so for the first time is sort of ironic, but it could be intriguing to him. I would think it would be.
To your point, Wendy, intriguing, it reminds me of what Michael Jordan did, setting this trend of the unrestricted year-to-year, and then LeBron came along and did it and gave himself freedom after each and every season. In particular, in football, in a way, Tom Brady is sort of a trendsetter in this mold. Like, knowing that I'm going, not only am I going to bet on me, I'm in the twilight of my career, and I do want those possibilities available to me to see what it's like somewhere else. That doesn't mean I'm leaving, but the fact that he has that opportunity, I think, kind of frees him up from a little bit of pressure of knowing I have to go back to New England and I've committed to them for 2 or 3 years. Because to Dan's point, his makeup is not to give up on a team and go into a contract battle and do all of that stuff. If he committed 2 or 3 years, he would have stayed in New England. I thought it was so interesting he did that.
The most fascinating part to me is this. New England has never had to sell itself to Tom Brady, and now they have to. What can they do between now and the middle of March, which when free agency starts, to prove to Tom Brady, we will not put you in the same position that we did this past season? Who are we going to get to make sure that we actually do put people around you to help you play well? They've never had to do that with Tom Brady before. And that's the most fascinating part. They have 2 months to do it.
Yeah. Can I just say, what's the difference, too, between appreciating him, which I think Bill Belichick really made sure he showed that in his press conference in terms of when he said no one else in this building really appreciates him more than me, right? But at the same time, I think there's a difference between appreciating him and appreciating everything that he did in the past. And do they really still believe that this is the best time to still keep him moving forward when you start trying to build without and looking at life after Tom Brady with a younger option and what's best for the cap and what's best to starting to rebuild the team? Because eventually it is going to come to an end. And when do you cut the umbilical cord?
I agree. And I do think it can be an and also. Nobody wants to hear that in New England. It can be we appreciate and value everything he's done. And also it may be time to move in a different direction.
Because your responsibility is to 52
too.
Other
guys. Well, yeah, and that's just the nature of the beast. Anyway, we had to pick a team on upset alert, and I've got Green Bay for exactly that. Not because of Green Bay, but because of everything you just showed, JoJo. Mm-hmm. And I know you've been with the Seahawks a couple times this season. What's the vibe there?
Well, it's just interesting to me because, first of all, every time I watch Russell Wilson, I just his elusivity in the pocket and his ability to slither and just feel it. And we take it for granted. But there's so many quarterbacks that we watch around the league, even some of the younger ones, who just don't feel it and constantly get clobbered and constantly get stacked. And he feels it and he finds the one opening that is the only opening to get through to make the play. And so that is what really stands out to me. And also the maturation and the evolution of a DK Metcalf, who was just unbelievable in this game, for him to just create the last minute separation and for him to find it at the right time and to get it out, even when he's under siege, because the Eagles' defense was really coming. You know that's what Jim Schwartz is going to do. And for him to know it's coming, still beat it, still make the play on top of it in a hostile environment, I think is just great. Yeah.
No question. Do you trust Aaron Rodgers and that Packers offense to match it, to go one for one here?
Yeah. But if it comes down to who's going to make the dynamic play, I'm going Russell Wilson at this point in time, because we've seen Aaron Rodgers miss some of these opportunities to really make Green Bay look like a team that can't be beat. So when you got three, though, it's different. Like, this is a knack, right? This is what you want all great point guards to do. You want them to raise and elevate the level of play of everybody around them. And when you got a quarterback, you and I playing in the league, when you have a quarterback that you know, it don't matter. We got a chance because of that guy, everybody else has success.
All right, fair point. Well, speaking of which, new on NFL Live from our ESPN insider Adam Schefter, Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm has officially declared for the 2020 NFL draft. You know, Dan, it was just a season ago that we were already looking toward this stacked quarterback draft class, and that's the way it's shaping up.
This is big news because Jake Fromm is going to have some first-round consideration. Struggled this year because of everything around him. Those young receivers really hurt him, but he is going to blow away people in the interview process.
Four new head coaches have been hired. One remaining job to go, that opening in Cleveland. We have reporters with every team introducing a new head coach, and we'll start with John Keim in the nation's capital.
Thanks, Wendy. There are no guarantees for quarterback Dwayne Haskins under new coach Ron Rivera, who has remained noncommittal about the Redskins quarterback situation despite Haskins' strong finish. Rivera wants to see how Haskins handles the offseason as well as the spring workouts before reaching any conclusion. Regardless, Haskins will have another offense to learn under new coordinator Scott Turner and another quarterback's coach to get used to, an expected hire, Ken Zampezi. Now for an update on the New York Giants, here's Jordan Ronan.
Thanks, John. Once Joe Judge finalizes his contract with the Giants, the next step will be putting together a formidable staff. That's a key part of the process, especially for a first-time head coach who would benefit from veteran coordinators who themselves have head coaching experience. One name expected to be in the mix on the defensive side is Brett Bielema, the current Patriots defensive line coach. He's worked the past 2 years with Judge and has been a head coach at Arkansas and Wisconsin. Now let's check in with Ed Werder and the Cowboys.
Well, thanks, Jordan. The ninth head coach in Cowboys history is Mike McCarthy, who as head coach of the Packers held up the Lombardi Trophy in the stadium Jerry Jones built. History suggests that's a negative. Six NFL coaches have led two different franchises to Super Bowls, but nobody in NFL history has won a Super Bowl with two different teams, as McCarthy is now expected to do. McCarthy could not have chosen a more different situation in terms of franchise ownership than in making the transition from what he had in Green Bay, where there is no single owner, to the Jerry Jones Show here in Dallas. His first public interaction with Jones happens here at the Star later this afternoon. Here's David Newton with the Panthers.
Thanks, Ed. It's fitting the Panthers are holding their press conference to introduce new coach Matt Rhule in the indoor practice facility that David Tepper built. It's fitting because the owner of the Panthers fulfilled most of the promises he set forth when he bought the team a couple of years ago. The one promise he hasn't fulfilled, a winner. The Panthers are 12-20 since he took over. Now, he likes that Rhule is done rebuilding jobs at Baylor and Temple and believes he can do the same things here. And he also likes that Rhule maybe dresses, well, lacks dressing style just like him. As he told the team website, he dresses like expletive. You fill in the blanks. Back to you, Wendy.
Oh, I love a good fill in the blank. Thank you, David. Who is Matt Rhule? His best work came at the college level. He led Temple to a 2-10 win season after the program had only done that just once before. That was in 1979. Then at Baylor, he helped lead another turnaround. helping the Bears to an 11-3 record this season. He also played collegiately as a linebacker under Penn State's Joe Paterno. That underscores, though, what a difficult situation Baylor was in, really facing the death penalty and all kinds of trouble, and he turned that program around. He's known, guys, as a program builder. It's how he built his reputation and what got him, I think, so much interest from these NFL teams. What do you think of the hire?
Hence, you see a 7-year contract, because Tepper understands that it might take some time to get this organization to where they need to be. Matt Rhule has been around a 3 or 4 year where you see a significant difference in the program, how it's run, and success that translates on the field. It's a great hire if you're looking for a college guy that's proven the fact that he can come in, garner the attention, bring everything home, and possibly have a tremendous amount of success. Now, this is the NFL. It's different. But with that being said, 7 years, I heard something very interesting, too. Tepper comes from a minority part of the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers are known for committing to coaches and keeping them for a long time. They think that's the best formula for success. Another reason why you see a 7-year contract. But when I saw it, Wendy, the first thing I thought was, damn, I need to go into coaching.
I mean, it puts him in the upper echelon. I mean, that's John Gruden territory, not quite, but it puts him in the upper echelon of some very experienced NFL head coaches, but Tepper chose to make the investment.
I think the most impressive thing with Matt Rhule is the turnarounds happened without the infusion of a ton of talent, right? Like, it was about development. It was about coaching. Every coach, when they get a job, comes in and says, like, yeah, you know what? We're going to be a family-based program, and we're going to do things the right way. Every coach says that. Now, very few actually follow it through. How do you turn around programs without talent is completely understand that football is a relationship-based business, and you got to get kids, people, to buy in to what you're saying without their ability being raised. It's not like all these kids at Baylor all of a sudden became different players in a matter of 24 months because Matt Rhule became, you know, got there. They didn't get like, they didn't go from 5-0 to 4-4 in the 40. It's because he set a standard level, an expectation level, and then equipped every guy differently to reach that standard or expectation level because he understands it's about people. And that's how he was able to turn those things around so quickly. And to me, that's more impressive than can you acquire talent, right? Because in the NFL, certainly talent matters, but can you get your culture, your expectation level, your organization run like a machine? And that's what they're hoping he does in Carolina.
Look no further. I mean, I hate to say it, but the Dallas Cowboys, the latest iteration, they have talent. They have a lot of pieces in place and yet couldn't kind of get over that hump because the systematic approach may have been lacking at times, JoJo.
Well, you're right. He is known for being a program builder, but the question becomes, can he do that at the NFL level with adults, with talent and players that are making certain salaries that will easily question you during times of adversity? And then also, are you going to be given the time to create that culture in the same way that you are afforded that time? Because on the contract says that, but I mean, there are many coaches who get a certain term and then they don't live the term of the contract because it still becomes based on results. And then lastly, there's things that are beyond his control. First of all, we have to understand and know what is the health of your quarterback, right? And then he does have certain pieces like a Christian McCaffrey that he can build around, but they're going to listen to him with the results first and then anything, but he can command the room with his knowledge and his ability and his offense and his X's and O's and all of that. But at the end of the day, you hold them with your results. And that's what he still has to prove at the end of the day, because all teams are showing up to play the game.
JoJo, to that point, I think preliminary, when you see a 7-year contract, that's in a profound effort to make sure you're establishing with the players on that team that this is the guy.
Sure, I agree.
Like he'll outlast you if you have a 4-year deal. Maybe that's the case. And to your point, coaches can be fired at any time. We all know that. But I think when you see a 7-year deal with that amount of money as a player in that locker room, you're like, oh, this, we going the way Matt Rhule is going because of that.
And the reason I like it so much is they didn't hire Matt Rhule for scheme. They didn't hire Matt Rhule for X's. No one loves X's and O's and cool stuff more than me, right? But Cliff Kingsbury was hired in Arizona because of scheme. And we've seen some coaches be hired because of scheme. Everyone ties Sean McVay in the Rams to that hire about scheme. It wasn't. I was there when it happened. It was about leadership. It was about how he relates to people. It was about his expectation and standard level in equipping everybody. That's why I think it's a home run hire, is because it's not about X's and O's.
Now, there have been some leadership that were tied directly. I think Freddie Kitchen comes to mind, or working directly with one player. But you're right, McVay gets lumped into that when that wasn't the case. Correct. He had all those other intangibles as well.
Well, if you paid attention to the Rams, to your point, Dan, you could see the affinity the players had for him.
Of course, like, yeah.
Especially defensively. And then another thing you brought up this morning when we were talking about possible with the Browns bringing in Lincoln Riley and Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips was the catalyst. He was the calm guy. He was the experience in the NFL, the experience with winning Super Bowls. So it's easy for coaches when they come in Sean McVay's role, and then you put a guy like Wade Phillips in place, who's proven time and time again that you can have success, to continue to reaffirm some things that guys may not want to hear from a young coach, or may just question if he's really about what he's talking about. And to that point, I think Matt Rhule has to make an effort, and Tepper has to make an effort, to put someone with that kind of knowledge and acumen around him, just in case these guys don't buy in immediately.
So we talk about this, I think we've talked about it almost every week, really, and so this week no different. But when we talk about the future of Cam Newton today, does the tone take, are we talking about it any differently than we did a week ago when we did not know who would be leading that team? What does this hire mean? Well, or does it mean anything for
Cam? I think listen, no matter who the head coach was, Cam's future in Carolina is going to be more hinged upon his health. If Cam Newton comes back in 2 weeks or a month or 2 months, and his doctors or the doctors say, man, Cam is close to 100% as he's been in 5 years, you're saying your prayers, because that's a blessing. You've got Cam Newton back. But if Cam comes back and you're like, you know what, he's 85%, the foot's not healed that great, then this is another signal that Cam's time in Carolina would be up, because the long-term contract, because they have basically blown everything up. Tepper has blown everything up and wants to restart.
Well, the good thing is that, you know, there's still a lot of time. It's only January. And as far as, like, getting that information from Cam Newton as to, like, how he's feeling, it's the question, I think, for me is, like, how is Carolina going to play it? Because, you know, if you're not finding out from Cam Newton until February, March, April,
you gotta make plans.
You know, it's like, okay, are we getting another quarterback? And then how much are we – when does that – what round does that quarterback come in relative to if, you know, Cam Newton is really going to be ready? So there's a lot of information that has to go back and forth between now and then to kind of really figure that out, because we all know that quarterbacks don't grow on trees, even if you are going to get one out of the draft.
No, and certainly not the quarterback, the stature of Cam Newton when he's healthy. But again, we're going to go to the press conference shortly. We do expect to hear from the new head coach. What do you most want to hear from a guy who doesn't have a whole lot of NFL experience, one year and not as a head coach?
The ability for him to connect to those players that are pros.
All right, as anticipated, there he is, Carolina Panthers head coach Matt Rhule.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you guys showing some of my past press conference. I had to kind of cross a couple things out, and because I really believe in what I believe. And it was really, really humbling for me to sit there and see that, and then to stand up here and see just the outpouring of support from the community, from the organization, on behalf of my family, and I thank you so much. And Mr. Tepper, Mrs. Tepper, Dave, Nicole, I thank you so much for entrusting me with your prized football franchise. And I can promise you this, I'll work each day with everything that I have, and I'll hire a staff that will work each day with everything that we have that makes you proud of your organization. And Mr. Tepper talked a little bit about it, but it was really clear from the moment we pulled up to our house. I got off the plane from Mexico. We had spent a couple days there after the bowl game, and I called Steven and said, hey, we're a couple minutes away. We're maybe a minute late. And I believe in process. I believe in doing things the right way. And I think when you're trying to make a decision about moving your family, what job you're going to go to, all those different things, you want to go to someone who does things right. And when the owner, when Marty, the general manager, when they're already at your house before you get there, when they help you carry things in, when you see them sit there and talk to your kids, I sat there with my wife and I said, there's no doubt that we share a common vision. There's no doubt that we believe in doing things the right way, and I thank you guys for the process. It's been so first class, and I know that Mr. Tepper, I know that Marty will truly be partners as we move forward. You know, for anyone who knows anything about me, they know that family's the most important thing to me. And I would not be where I am today if it were not for my wife, Julie, my son, Bryant, my daughters, Vivian, Leona. Years ago, Julie and I, before our son was born, and he was eventually born, we were at Western Carolina, and my first recruiting trip, I had strep throat. And I called the coach, like, thinking, like, coaches could have a day off. I didn't know at the time that coaches don't get a day off. And he said, well, you have strep throat, that's too bad. Get to Charlotte, you have to go recruiting. And so I got in the back seat of the car, and Julie drove me to West Charlotte, and I walked in, and I talked to the coach, and I did my job, and she drove me all day around to the schools in Mecklenburg County, and then we drove back to Cullowhee. She's a special woman. And I would not be able to be here. I would not be able to have had success at Temple and Baylor if it was not for her and for my family now. You know, sometimes making a change is easier for the coach. I'm going to stay here, and they're going to head back. So I appreciate them. I appreciate all that they've meant to me. My mom and dad, who've moved to Temple to be there with us, moved to Baylor and can't be here today. I'm so grateful for them. Julie's dad moved to Waco as well. We want to be a part of this family, and we're grateful for our family that we have. People have asked me, you know, why the call, why the draw, why do you want to take on this next chapter of your life? Well, Coach, you had a great thing at Baylor. Why did you want to go to the NFL? And it's really simple to me. I start every decision in my life with why. And I'll tell you this. I love the game of football. I was a kid that grew up in New York City and basketball all around me. And since from an early age, I loved the game of football. My mom would, when my dad was working, my mom would take me out, and I would say now as I ran a fly route, and she'd throw the ball as far as she could, and I'd go over and try to catch it. And my dad, once a year, twice a year, would drive me to Pennsylvania, to Penn State, and watch games. I love the game of football. And football's done so much for me in my life. I was able to go to Penn State and was not a great player, but I was able to in some small part contribute to that team. I was able then to go on and get my master's degree because of football. I was able to get into coaching, and football's brought me in all these places and to meet all these people, and it's brought me here today. It's a special game. It's the greatest game that there is. You walk into a locker room, there's guys of all ages. There's guys from all different parts of the country. There's guys of all shapes and sizes. Yet they come together to form a team and play the hardest game that there is to play. They play in bad weather. They play when they're injured. They play when they don't feel great. They find a way to get it done as a team. It's the greatest game that there is. And as I sat here and was trying to make a decision about my life, I said to myself, Matt, what do you want? And I want to go and be a part of the greatest game at the highest stage. And I just had to figure out where. I'm so excited to be a part of this community. I'm so excited to be a part of this team. I'm walking in, I just saw Steve Smith, and I'm sitting there saying to myself, my goodness, the people that have come before me, the greatness. I met Julius Peppers earlier, like Julius Peppers. The greatness of the men who have played the game for this franchise. And I want to continue that and build that. I want to make sure that the game is played the right way each and every day, not just in the games, but on the practice field, in the meeting rooms. I want to make sure that we honor this game that's given so much to us, and that we build a team that cares about each other, that plays hard for each other. And I think that all starts with me. So as I sit here and I accept this tremendous opportunity, I just want you to know that I will work tirelessly each day to bring you guys a championship, to bring you a championship. Because that's what this region deserves. And that's what the players who came before us deserve. And that's what the guys in that locker room, as I've had a chance to meet them, that's what they deserve. And as I said so many years ago, how do you do that? You just start building. One day at a time. I truly believe that everything counts and that everything's important. The way that I park my car in the morning. The way that I walk to the practice field. The way that I watch tape. Everything that I do. Everything that our players do, everything that anyone associated with the Carolina Panthers do, everything has got to be our best each and every day. And when you live a life like that where everything's important, where no days are throwaways, You can be proud of the guy next to you. You can be proud of your effort. And most importantly, eventually success and championships will come. I was looking for an ownership who believed that. I was looking for a general manager who believed that. Who believed that life is not just about setting goals, it's about process. It's about the daily steps, the daily grind that you have to go through. I wanted to find people in an organization that's tough. That's tough. Keep pounding isn't just a slogan, it's a way of life. That when things are hard or when things are good, how you feel or what's happening can affect your effort each and every day. I wanted to come be a part of an organization that believes that, and I know that I found that. We're going to have a tough, hardworking, competitive team. Tough to me means that each and every day, no matter how we feel, no matter what the circumstances are, we're going to come to work and we're going to do our job and get it done. I want to have a hardworking team, a team that believes in relentless preparation. I want guys that love football. I want coaches that love football, that each and every day are searching for an edge. And then I want guys who are competitive, that want to be the best, whether we're playing Madden or if we're playing in the championship game. They want to be the best each and every day, not just compared to the guy across from them, though that's important. They want to be at their best. They want to be the very best that they can be in everything that they do. I think when you have that mentality in the locker room, you can be special. When you have it with your coaching staff, you can be really good. And when it starts with your owner and it starts with your GM, you can be memorable. And that's what I found as we sat there and as I went through that process, a group of men that are committed to doing this the right way and doing it in a way that maybe hasn't been done. To the people that work in the building, to the people that are wake up each and every day trying to make sure that the Carolina Panthers are their best, I just want you to know that I just want to be a small part of what we're all going to do together. To the people in the community, I want you to know that we are so excited to raise our kids here. We're so excited to give back to the community here. We want to be a part of this area. And to the players, I want you to know that each and every day I'm going to give you my best. I'm not a perfect man, I just doing the best I can to be the best that I can be. But I want you to know that if I'm going to ask you to be tough, hardworking, and competitive, I'm going to do that myself. I'm going to tell you when I'm wrong, and I'm going to push myself to be the very best that I can be. I'm going to hire the best staff that wants to be here. I want to coach guys that want to be here. And I want us to have not just a great season, but a great team that endures forever. So on behalf of my family, please let me say thank you. And if you would just bear with me, I want to make sure I thank all the players at Baylor, all the players at Temple. I would not be here if it were not for them. The guys who believed in me and bought into me, the guys in Texas that bought into this guy from Philadelphia, the guys in Philadelphia that bought into a coach they didn't know, all the coaches that worked with me, the staff, the administration at Baylor, the staff, the administration at Temple, Mac Rhodes, Linda Livingstone, Pat Kraft, thank you so much. I had great, great, great partners at Baylor. I found great, great, great partners here in Marty and Mr. Tepper. And I look forward to working each and every day with you to make us the best organization in the National Football League. We've already started working. After I'm done, I'm going to take my suit off and get back to work. And I promise you, you'll get my best. Keep pounding.
So with that, we'll take questions. Guys, we have mics in the aisle, so just raise your hand and we'll try to get a mic to you. We're going to start right here with Scott.
Coach, congratulations and welcome. Scott Fowler from the Charlotte Observer. Could you speak to the quarterback situation you will inherit and particularly your plans, although I'm sure that at this point you're still thinking about it, but what you're going to do with Cam Newton?
Yeah, And to be quite fair, I probably haven't had a chance with regards to really any player to talk to Marty and Mr. Tepper in terms of long-term vision. So I would never want to speak out of school or, you know, uneducatedly. What I will say is this, you know, I had a chance to talk to Cam yesterday and I have the utmost respect for him and what he's done. And I love the way he talked to me, to be quite honest. Now, he didn't want to talk about the past. He wanted to talk about the future. And so, But other than that, I would rather, much rather talk to those guys and kind of get a feel for not just Cam, but all the players on the roster and really have a good process moving forward for the entire roster.
Let's go to Jordan.
Hey, Coach, welcome. Time and again in your own, as you say, your own processes at various programs, you have inherited very little, adjusted, and then worked with what you had to turn the program around. Can you think of a couple specific examples where you have made your players successful by creating success for them despite the situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we took over at Temple, we were moving up in conferences. So we had been in the MAC, and we had gone into the Big East and then the American Athletic Conference. So we kind of needed a reboot. And when I went to Baylor, you know, you're supposed to have 85 scholarship players. I started the first year with 45, you know, that were inherited. And so to me, you know, the key to being a great leader is not to make excuses and complain and, you know, it's just to get to work, right? Figure it out. So, what we did both of those places is we found the guys that were going to fit. And if they were freshmen, they were freshmen. If they were seniors, they were seniors. But we found the guys that fit in that thing I talked about, being tough, being hard working, being competitive. And we played them. And we gave them experience. We played them through the adversity. And my first year at Temple, I was 2-10. My first year at Baylor, I was 1-11. But, you know, we were a championship caliber team in 3 years. And so I think the thing for me is it's easy to talk about process. It's easy to say, hey, these are the things we're going to do. Will you still be saying that when you're having not a lot of success? And so I was able to do that twice. I learned a lot from that. And I think our players, the biggest thing I learned from those things, Jordan, is that the players learned in those years where we had adversity that I wasn't going to throw them under the bus. I wasn't going to talk bad about them. I wasn't going to say we're losing. I was right there in it with them. And our coaches were right there in it with them. And when we started to have success, they realized, like, hey, these coaches are for us. Because that's really what this is supposed to be. The coaches are there to help the players be their best. Like, I was going to say it, and I get caught up sometimes, but as we talked, I'm so committed to our players, and I know Mr. Tepper and Marty are so committed to our players having the very best in terms of sports science, in terms of recovery and regeneration. Like, this should be a place that players say, I want to go there. No, we practice hard and we prepare hard, but we do the things to extend your career and allow you to play at peak performance. And so I think our players saw that in those hard times, and then they had success, and we really had a great relationship.
David.
Yeah, David Newton, ESPN.com. When David Tepper was describing what he was looking for in a coach, he talked about how the transition from the college level is very tough. What about your experience on the college level is going to help you make that transition and be successful?
Yeah, I think anytime you talk about, like, in global terms like that, I think it comes down to different people. I had a chance to be in the NFL. I worked under Tom Coughlin. It wasn't a real long experience, but I think it was a good experience. And so I think I went to be a college coach saying, hey, this is how I'm going to do it. You know, I played for Joe Paterno. I worked for some great coaches, but I worked under Tom Coughlin. I went back to the college game and said, okay, I'm going to do it this way. And so, different than a lot of guys, I've kind of done it that way. And I think the players that you look at that I've had come out of Temple and come out of Baylor, we have a lot of guys in the pros, and we have a lot of guys that get there and get second contracts and have had a lot of success. And I think that's because, I'm going to be demanding, but I'm going to be demanding of myself first. I'm going to want accountability, but I want accountability of my staff and I first. And I think players that I've had, I mean, when you can communicate with them, when you have the same vision, that's the one thing. As I've talked to guys so far, every guy that I've talked to has reminded me that, hey, Coach, we're all in this for the same thing, and I completely agree. So I think the college thing is maybe true for a lot of guys, but I think for me I've had some unique experiences.
Hi, Coach. Elena Getzenberg, Charlotte Observer. Welcome to Charlotte.
Thank you.
In the assistant hiring process, where are you with that? And are you looking to bring people from Baylor or other places? Where are you looking for to bring your assistants from?
Yeah, I'll have a diverse staff and a mixed staff. You know, I think one of the best staffs in football at Baylor. A lot of my guys, I got to Baylor from the NFL. So a lot of guys have NFL experience, but, I think two things. Number one, there's a lot of guys that I know that are interested in coming here, and there's a lot of people that are really excited about this organization, and they're really excited about what Mr. Tepper and Marty have already started. And so I'm getting calls from guys that say, hey, I want to be a part of that. Because I think what you see here is you see alignment. You see an owner, you see a general manager and a head coach that aren't forcing themselves to do things. They see things the same way. And people understand that that's how you win in this league. When everyone's on the same page, you're going to be successful. So I'll probably get here. I'm going to start working with Marty today or tomorrow, whenever, and start working on getting some people here. But the one thing I've learned and the advice I've gotten from so many people in this league is don't rush. Get the right people, and so that's what we'll do.
Brett.
Brett Jensen, WBT. How much, can you go a little bit more into the sports science aspect of it, and how much of that was a sticking point to making sure that you came here, and making sure that Mr. Tepper was going to build something that you were happy with?
Well, it was nothing really about, hey, are you going to build? I mean, I think as we started talking, the worlds of sports science, the worlds of analytics are things that I'm interested in. And as we talked, we had just a common interest in those things. And so I think the big thing about, they're always evolving. And I think really it's just a commitment to, it's a commitment to the application of things, you know, like we have Catapult at Baylor. They have Catapult here where you monitor the loads on players. And it really just comes down to the application of it. And can you get alignment from your football staff to your sports medicine staff to your sports science staff? So we didn't get into great detail about, hey, we're going to do this, this. And it was just more like, this is what I believe in. This is what they believe in. And to me, again, I just believe in common vision. If we believe in our players having the very best, then we can be really successful. And so I think when you're in college football, things people don't realize is like we don't get to draft anybody, and I don't get to offer somebody a signing bonus. So like we're all trying to get the best stuff. So we were way ahead of a lot of other college teams in terms of the sports science that's at Baylor. And so I've kind of gotten very used to it.
Nick.
Matt, Nick Carboni from NBC Charlotte. David kind of explained his aha moment that he and Marty had when they switched to kind of recruiting in that pitch to you. Did you have a similar moment where you thought this is an even better fit than I may have even thought coming into the interview, and why not take other interviews as you were reportedly scheduled to?
It was a long meeting, you know, so there was a lot of time there to talk, and I think that was good, right? I go through this, you know, I'm kind of a football coach, I'm just dissecting it, we're talking, and we were just talking. It wasn't scripted, and I think that was the biggest thing when I took it away from it was, man, I can sit there and talk to these guys for probably five more hours because we're having a great conversation. You know, Julie's kind of in the room, out of the room, she's in the next room, and my aha moment was when they left and she was like, what are you doing? Like, you need to go work for them. Like, that's you. And, you know, we've had lots of opportunities over the years, college, and she's always been right. She's always been right. And we've taken some jobs. People said, why are they going to Baylor? She's always said, go here, because of those people. And the second aha moment was when my son came downstairs and he said, are we going to Carolina? I said, no. And he stormed, this is a true story now, stormed out of the house. He said, you had one job. Like he wanted to be here. So, I just think when you find something that's right, it's right. You know, and we said it's right. And then fortunately the next morning they offered me the job and I took it.
Steve Reed.
Hey, Matt, welcome to Charlotte. Steve Reed from the Associated Press. I'm sure you had at least a chance to take a glimpse at this roster. What are your initial thoughts on what you have here to build with and where you want to go in the future as well?
Yeah, because I've kind of been involved in the game and then a couple different things, to be quite honest, I'm kind of looking at a couple different rosters. So I can't talk in great, great depth. You know, I know some key pieces. I've watched now, yesterday I tried to watch some games. I watched 3, 4, 5 games. And so really my next steps are, you know, my family's going to go back tonight and I'm going to stay here. And my next steps are really start to get to know the guys, start to, you know, watch the tape, and then hire a staff. And so I'd hate to talk, you know, without having a great sense of what I'm really going to say. But I've started that process and started getting to know some of the guys as well.
Guys, we're going to take two more. We're going to go to Joe Person, then we'll finish with Eric Spanberg.
Hey, Matt. It's Joe Person over here.
Sorry.
Could you walk us through the conversations with the Giants following the interview? Because I think based on some of the national reporting, there's a perception that, you know, I think your agent called them after your meeting with the Panthers. And just could you walk us through that?
I never had a chance. I never talked to anyone but them. I probably don't want to say anything, you know, that would come across in a bad way about anybody. So I just want to talk about them. But my agent talks to everybody, and I'm sure he had lots of conversations. He's representing a lot of guys probably also, too, that are in all these job mixes. So, for me, when they offered the job, and the biggest thing I'll say is when they offered, you know, a chance to be here for 7 years, it spoke to me about the chance, you know, the belief that we were going to do this together and do it the right way. And there was no doubt. And there's really no doubt the night before for my family. And there was really no doubt for me after just having that synergy that we were going to be here. So my agent, I know he talks to different people, but for me, the only person I talked to was Mr. Tepper.
Eric.
Hey, Eric Spanberg with the Charlotte Business Journal. As I'm sure you know, your new boss talks a lot about the Panthers have never had consecutive winning seasons, and he also talks a lot about sustained success. So with those two things in mind, I'm curious how the two of you have defined success in 2020, but then also what is that sustained success? What does that look like?
Yeah, so for me, what I would say is sustained success to me is kind of what I said earlier with that mindset that we want to be great at everything. Like, you're never going to hear me – I'm going to talk about winning Super Bowls, but really the goal to me is to be the best at everything. And I think if you are elite at everything, then eventually Super Bowls come and you can have sustained competitive excellence. And so to me, without knowing the roster, without knowing the things that will come up next year, what I do know is if we're a – you know, an 8-8 team, then we should be the best 8-8 team ever. If we're a 10-6 team, we should be the best 10-6 team. I don't know what those things are yet. I'm going to be just so process driven that I'm really just going to worry about tomorrow and the next day and the day after that. I think that's where I felt great about the conversations, is that we weren't talking about short-term things. We were talking about long-term. We were talking about building. We were talking about process. We were talking about doing things the right way. And I think so often people make mistakes because they set short-term goals. And I don't believe in that. I believe in setting a long-term goal. Like, we want to bring a championship. But then each and every day you have to wake up and say, what can I do today to make that happen? And that's true for everything in life in my mind. And it's certainly true for bringing a championship to Carolinas.
Molly, you'll be the last one.
Thanks. Hey, Coach. Molly Cotton, 7:30 The Game, ESPN Charlotte. I know you talk about not rushing the process when it comes to hiring your staff. Do you place a priority maybe on bringing a veteran NFL guy in on the staff?
And not really in terms of, like, coordinators and things like that, because I think, the league has seen, like, there's been great coordinators who are 60 and there's been great coordinators who are 28, you know, so it's not really that. I think one of the key pieces for me is to bring a veteran guy that can really, you know, work with me and mentor me. I've always done that everywhere I've been. I've always tried to have somebody that can be there to speak truth to me, speak truth to power, that can be kind of a right-hand guy. And so I want to have a great mix. And at the end of the day, all I really care about when I hire assistant coaches is, are they great teachers? That's really what this game's about. It's about getting players to play their best. And the best way to do that is to have guys who bring out the best in their players. And so old, young, none of those things matter to me. I don't have to know them. I just think when you meet guys who are great teachers who bring out the best in others, you kind of feel it. And so we're going to try to do that. But I will try to bring in someone who's been around. And lots of guys like that have reached out to me already, which is great.
Thanks, Coach. So that concludes today's press conference. Thank you all so much for coming, especially you, Brad Hoover, 45 in the back. We're going to have photo opportunities on stage. So photographers.
And that was Carolina head coach, Carolina Panthers head coach, I should say, Matt Rhule, who finishes up at Baylor and accepted the head position in Charlotte. And listen, it is certainly not about winning the press conference. That's not the ultimate goal. That's not even a goal. But like it or not, I think he did. And he came out, Dan, clearly in control and clearly able to work that room.
I want to either play for him, coach, right? Hang out, whatever. A couple things that he said that just resonated with me. He started with, I believe in what I believe. Don't flake. Don't be flaky as a coach. Players hate that stuff. Two, he's going to win a lot of free agents. That was an impressive
press conference. And he was communicating, let's make no mistake about it, to the masses.
Absolutely. It was very much a recruiting thing. The thing that I love the most, accountability of staff. You know this. Players hate when staffs aren't accountable for the things that they teach you or they tell you or they tell you to put on tape. Players tune you out once you do that. So for him to say the accountability of staff will be a big deal, players are going to love that.
Do I believe this guy? Like, period. That's what player buy-in, trust, the trust factor. Every successful coach or team that I played on, we believed that our coach was putting us in the best possible situation to win games. Because I think a lot of people, you know, you hear win games and the simplicity of that. The number one thing winning games do for players is it not only secures your future financially, but it also keeps you intrigued about this league. A lot of losing sometimes puts the lights out on a lot of guys' careers, even though they don't want to admit it. Because the second your career becomes about, well, let me go get the next paycheck, and you lose somewhat of that enjoyment that you have for football, it goes out. To me, Matt Rhule is just believable. Like, this is how it's going to be, guys. I hope you enjoy it. We're going to do it this way, and winning this one.
I think what stood out to me was just how much he exuded not just comfort, but also relatability, in that he truly intrinsically enjoys what he does from the micro level, like everything about whatever it takes about the day.
Even the media, even dealing with the media.
Yes, and the fact that he didn't, you know, and not that it's bad if you need to refer to notes or whatever, but I like the fact that he can stand behind the podium, look people in the eye in the media, look people, you know, who was ever in the audience, and just exude that, you know, that confidence, because that's, to me, is what men in the locker room notice when you're talking to them, is how much you can, you know, command them when you're speaking in good times and in bad times, and to be able to kind of ride those ebbs and flows, you know. So that's what stood out to me.
I agree. And look, this is just the beginning of what they hope will be a long journey, 7 years. But, you know, if you're David Tepper, you only have today, but you got to feel good about today anyway.
Wendy, this was an example of a coach that's been empowered. I don't know what those conversations was like between him and Tepper, but Matt Rhule has been empowered with this idea that you are going to be the catalyst and a big part of us having success in the future.
The Titans will look to pick up another win Saturday as they head to Baltimore to take on the top-seeded Ravens. Could be a battle in the ground game. Tennessee's Derrick Henry led all running backs in rushing yards this season, while Baltimore's Lamar Jackson was the leader among all quarterbacks. Here's defensive coordinator Wink Martindale on what it's like facing Derrick Henry.
Those guys that the kids create on Madden, you shouldn't be that big and be able to run like he runs. Like I said, he's a big man that carries the football. For all those of you that played football, he's that guy that had to wear the red stripe on his helmet, you know, because he didn't make weight.
Jeremy Fowler is with the Ravens and joins us now. Jeremy, the Ravens are game planning for Derrick Henry while hoping their own workhorse back, Mark Ingram, is back from injury. What can you tell us?
Well, Wendy, I just left the Ravens practice field a little bit ago, and Mark Ingram missed his second consecutive session. A source close to Ingram told me he has made great strides in his rehab this week, but tomorrow will be big. The Ravens are hopeful that he can handle at least a limited capacity leading up to that Titans game. They do feel good about backup Gus Edwards. Offensive coordinator Greg Roman said he wants all the action, and we don't skip a beat with him in there. And really, Wendy, the bigger issue in the Ravens locker room, how to stop Derrick Henry. It's an all-consuming job for these defensive guys. I rolled up to linebacker Josh Bynes' locker early, and he was watching a tablet, had his head buried in it, trying to break down Derrick Henry game film. So I asked him, what did you learn? He said, man, it goes back to peewee football fundamentals. Wrap up, drive your legs, bring them to the ground at all costs.
Yeah, there's no question about that, at all costs. Two of the best rushers in the league, Jeremy squaring off this weekend, Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. While Henry has found his success with his physical nature, boasting a league-leading after contact per rush, Lamar Jackson on the opposite end of the spectrum, leading the league in average yards before contact. The Cowboys have a new head coach. Prior to that, though, they also interviewed Marvin Lewis. Here is his thoughts on the interview process earlier on Golic and Wingo.
Well, I really think it's a problem that, you know, I spent some time in Indy. The NFL had a little bit of a conference on this, and they were discussing it. It was a problem we talked about from the bottom up and from the top down. That the decision makers that way, whether it be GMs, et cetera, are going to kind of favor people they know that way, and they don't know the minority coaches as well. And I think that's the one thing, and the same thing from the top up, generating more opportunities for young minority coaches to continue to move and do things.
Marvin Lewis addressing the question, you know, how did you feel given the fact that he interviewed? And then really, I think several hours later, Mike McCarthy was named the head coach. So the process was certainly quick.
Well, I just talked to Rod Graves, who's taken over the day-to-day processes and operations for the Fritz Pollard Alliance, which was created to support the Rooney Rule back when it was instituted, and just to get his quick reaction to how this whole process has unfolded. And what he told me is, he said, listen, I respect the decisions that the teams have made with the vacancies that were, you know, around this year. He said, what has disappointed me this time around is the people who were not involved in the process, who weren't a part of the consideration, which were people like Leslie Frazier, Jim Caldwell, Ken Norton Jr., the Todd Bowles, or what have you. And then he also wanted to say, listen, you know, when it comes to the Rooney Rule, I think there's a lot of misguided kind of perception about what it's supposed to be. It's not just supposed to be where, you know, this is supposed to be the end all for everything. It's there to basically have people participate in the process, but it doesn't require teams to actually select the minority that's participating in the process now.
All right, JoJo, we're going to be talking more about this in the next few weeks. No question about that. Coming up at 4 Eastern, Mike McCarthy, he'll be at the Star. One question you'd ask if you were there.
Are you going to keep Dak Prescott and why?
Ooh, that's technically two, but we'll let it slide. Marcus.
It's a question.
You got one?
What y'all do at the sleepover, man?
Oh, that's right. He had a sleepover with Jerry. Did he get some ice cream?
Did you have hors d'oeuvres?
Hors d'oeuvres.
Wow.
Okay, JoJo, what you got?
Cream. And mine just kind of butts off his, which is, when should Dak Prescott get that long-term contract? Oh. When should he get it?
Come on.
What are you going to say?
Did Dez catch it? Come on. Mine is better than him. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We might be back tomorrow. See you then.